Welcome to Life, Love, and Money, Conversations with Diane. I'm your host, Diane Cycle. Today we'll be talking about the topic of jealousy and unlearning jealousy. We have a variety of guests with different ideas, opinions, and techniques for using jealousy to enhance your life and to enhance your relationships. It doesn't have to be a powerful force of destruction. It can actually sometimes be good for us. So also joining us today is an expert on unlearning jealousy, and she's also a psychologist and an author of several books. Welcome, Deborah Taj Annapol.
Thank you.
So tell us a little bit about your background and your experience with jealousy, and then a little bit how you got to what I feel is the ultimate unjealousy, polyamory.
Okay, well, my professional background's in clinical psychology, so my training part of it has been in helping people get comfortable with feeling uncomfortable feelings. And the way that seems to work is that the more you avoid and resist and try not to feel something, the more intense that feeling gets and the more stuck you get in that feeling. That's what we call them emotions, because they move. So jealousy is probably the scariest emotion that I think most people, given the opportunity, would like to avoid that feeling. It tends to be very intense and uncomfortable in the body.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's partly, and the question always comes up, is it inevitable to have jealousy? And the answer is yes and no. People often ask me, you know, do you still have jealous feelings? And sometimes I do, but I don't let them control me, and I take care of them before they get so big that they overwhelm me.
Mm-hmm.
And I was very fortunate to have the opportunity in my early 20s to be exposed to the possibility of making a choice about whether I was going to surrender to the jealousy or whether I was going to make a different choice. And you do have that option early in the process. Once you're full on into the jealousy, then it's got you. You just kind of have to breathe through it and wait till it goes on. And so what happened for me in my early 20s was I fell head over heels with a man in love. Just in love like I had no idea was even possible. Really, really big. The earth moved and bells rang and, you know, just those things that poets write about. And after I was so in love with this man, he told me that, oh, by the way, I have another girlfriend. I'm not monogamous. And I had, you know, not really encountered a situation like this where somebody was basically telling me that, okay, you know, we can have a relationship, but it's not going to be an exclusive relationship. And I realized right then, okay, I have a choice. I can say, no, thank you, never mind. I'll go find somebody else. Or I could choose to accept that this is the situation that I find myself in, and what would it be like if I accept that? Because he hadn't lied to me. He hadn't cheated on me. This was very early on, you know, maybe within the first week of meeting. I didn't have a load of betrayal and broken commitments or any of that. It was just a straight, could I be okay with him loving me and loving somebody else? And the love was so powerful, it was not even really a choice. How could I do anything other than accept the situation? So that was how I first discovered this possibility that, yeah, we have a territorial instinct, and we're animals. You know, we have an instinct to guard our territory and possess our territory. We've been trained to think of our love objects, our partners, as territory. That's the part that can be changed. Actually, another human being is not a possession, is not something that we can own or control.
Oh, that's huge. A lot of people, I think that's where it comes, is people want to own and control other people.
Yeah, because, you know, that's our source of love, and we want to protect it. It's important to us.
Mm-hmm.
And what we don't realize, and this is in my book, Seven Natural Laws of Love, is about realizing that what we've been taught about what love is mostly not the true nature of love. It's trying to impose our human laws on a force of nature, and it doesn't work.
Oh, I like the way you say that. And that's so true, because those imposing of human laws human laws on something of nature, that's painful, and love doesn't hurt.
Exactly.
True.
Exactly. And yet, you know, for a lot of people, that's what we've been taught, is the more it hurts, the bigger the love is. And it's not really like that.
And so now you were in your 20s and experiencing this. Was your love, was he in his 20s as well, or was he a little bit older and more experienced?
He was a couple years older, but still in the same age bracket, and kind of an unusual person in that he had had an experience of, you know, a spiritual or a religious experience of oneness. And this was what led him to realize that, yeah, it was possible actually to love more than one person. Because what we're taught most often, at least until pretty recently, and even since the rise of the polyamory movement, we're taught that you can really only love one person at a time if it's a romantic love. Now, this doesn't apply if it's a child. You know, we expect to love all our children. We expect to love both our parents. We expect to love you know, all of our friends. But when sex enters the picture, there's this idea that it's only possible to love one person.
Isn't that amazing?
It is.
It doesn't make any sense.
This idea.
I know, and it's been ingrained, and that just seems like the quote-unquote right way to do it.
Yeah, and the truth is that where most people's communication skills are and self-awareness, it actually does often work better to do one at a time, because you need to be pretty present to what you're feeling, and you need to have healed a lot of the wounds that many of us carry into our relationships in order to have a relationship with more than one person at the same time without creating a lot of drama. But that's just a limitation of our maturity and education. It's not inherent.
Well, so as a psychologist, so when you're treating people, what do most people come in with that they haven't, like say there's a marriage problems and there's jealousy issues. What is it that you find professionally that people have not dealt with? What wounds have not been healed, and what have they not dealt with that is causing this kind of destruction?
Okay. Well, you know, that's a really great question, partly because we're individuals, and there's five or six major categories of wounding that creates jealousy, but it's not just one. So one person's jealousy is different very often from another person's jealousy. And it's really important to know what triggers you and what triggers your partners, or you could do exactly the wrong thing. For example, for a lot of people, what happens is they have a story that they're not good enough. And so if your partner is interested in someone else, this must be because you're not good enough, or you're just not enough.
Mm-hmm.
They wouldn't be interested in someone else if you were enough. And if that's, that's the wound that gets triggered, you're comparing yourself to somebody else and coming up short. And that's going to feel bad pretty much all the time. Another very common one is fear of loss.
Mm-hmm.
Partly, if you've got issues of abandonment, maybe one of your parents left the family for somebody else, and even though they weren't leaving you, that was the net effect that may have partly or completely disrupted the relationship with your parent who left because they love someone else. So, that might be a real event. Or perhaps you had a parent who had an affair, got found out, and your parents separated as a result. So all these things add up to you're sensitized to think that if another person enters the picture, there's going to be a loss. And, in fact, if you're operating out of a monogamy paradigm and your partner falls in love with somebody else, there is a good chance that they're going to leave you for the other person. But in a polyamorous mindset, you could have both and. It doesn't have to be either or. So this is another common one. Another one we call time jealousy. And this is not so much about objecting to the love being shared, but feeling like I'm not really getting all the quality time I want with my partner, and now I'm going to have to share with somebody else, I'm going to get even less. And again, this might be a realistic fear. It might turn out that way. But if the issue is time, then you can make a negotiation with your partner. Okay, I will accept that you have another beloved, but only if you increase the quality and amount of attention I'm getting.
Mm-hmm.
For other people, the concern is really more, what are other people going to think? I don't have a problem with you loving somebody else, but my mother is going to think there's something wrong with me if I'm letting my husband have an affair, quote unquote. Oh, God.
So what other people will think? That's a big one, huh? That didn't even enter my mind, what other people would think.
Yeah, so, there's a variety of reasons. And so in working with people, the first thing is to discover what's really underneath the feeling. The feeling is usually triggered by a particular set of thoughts and beliefs, and they're different in different people. Once you know what the trigger is, then you can start. I recommend people do a combination of negotiating with their partner to kind of tiptoe around the biggest triggers, but also being willing to let jealousy be your teacher. That is, being willing to take this as an opportunity to heal some of those wounds or change some of those beliefs that are not really supporting you to have the happiness you want in your life.
Absolutely. Now, we are talking about maybe affairs, with our families being broken up because of affairs and such, literally sexual encounters with other people. What do you think do you encounter this even? Because I've heard it's a pretty big deal, personally, even with some of my coaching clients, that they're jealous of Facebook friends or texting their husbands or wives or girlfriends, boyfriends, texting other people because either the time they spend or the connection that they have over the internet. What's your take on that? What do you feel about Facebook and social media?
Yeah, I've heard about also this jealousy from. It's similar to what was being talked about a few years ago as emotional affairs, kind of before the rise of the social networks. So, your partner maybe isn't having sex with somebody, but they're developing this really close, intimate friendship with someone of the opposite sex. And that's not a problem in and of itself. The problem is when there's a sense of separation. And I think it's the same with Facebook and Second Life and these other social media, that if the social network friend is replacing you in some way or taking the time and the energy that you want and you're not getting, or preventing your partner from being more available to resolve a conflict that is, you know, maybe why they started seeking support elsewhere, then it doesn't matter whether it's 3D or virtual. It's experientially the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm glad you brought up this part about affairs, because it's very important for people to understand that when there is an affair, and by affair I mean either a connection that's kept secret or one that creates separation, undesired separation, there's a sense of betrayal. And betrayal and jealousy are not the same, and they need to be dealt with differently. But for a lot of people, it's just one big, painful, uncomfortable feeling.
Yes. I have not looked at it that way, but there is a difference between betrayal and jealousy.
Yeah, I think, you know, most of us confuse them, and it's different. And in betrayal, if it's an actual betrayal, the truth is that you've been violated in some way. And there needs to be an acknowledgement, and there needs to be a process of taking responsibility and asking forgiveness. And until that's done, forget trying to deal with jealousy. Jealousy is hard enough to deal with on its own. It's going to be absolutely hopeless to, it'd make it worse to try to get somebody to get over their jealousy when they're struggling with a sense of betrayal.
Mm-hmm.
The trust has been broken.
Right. Right. And so when you're working with someone, most people, when they're jealous, I'm leaving you. We're getting divorced. I'm leaving you. Whatever. So instead, what do you recommend? Seeing a therapist, obviously that's always recommended, right? Is getting a third person that has some experience around this. And
that's enormously helpful, yeah.
Yeah, and then now do you hold workshops, or besides writing your books, do you hold workshops that people can come and experience some of this, third-person intervention with some experience and some wisdom, and then just some experiential learning as well. Do you have anything like that?
Yeah, I do offer workshops, but what I've found is that when dealing with jealousy and betrayal in general, that's much better done just with an individual couple or an individual person, because people feel just too vulnerable and exposed usually to deal with these issues in a group. If they're willing to, that's great, but for most people, it's too hard. So I do coach people both in person and over the phone about how can you repair your relationship if that's what you want to do, or how can you get more complete with it so that you can move on without carrying these wounds into the next one.
Yeah, because you do take your baggage with you if it's not cleaned.
Right. And, some people, they end up having an affair rather than being honest with their partner about what they're feeling and what they want, because they're actually trying to protect their partner. They don't want to hurt their feelings. They don't want to upset them. And I'm not saying this is a good idea, but that at the bottom, there's a loving intention there. And that's very different from somebody who has an affair because they don't care about what their partner thinks, or they're angry at their partner and this is how they're going to get back at them, or they're just not aware of the hurt that they're causing. And like jealousy, there's different reasons that people have affairs. It's not all one reason. And again, it's very important to discover, what is this an expression of? And for some couples, it's actually an affair has been a stimulus to bring them closer and create a stronger relationship. So I think it's almost impossible to get there without some outside help. And what I'm often able to do for people, too, is tell them very quickly what I think their chances are of being able, you know, is it worth it? What are your chances of being able to recover from and go on and have a beautiful relationship versus having this happen over and over and over again, which nobody wants?
Mm-hmm. Unless you're open in an open relationship, and it's not an affair.
Even if you're in an open relationship, then you still don't want secret affairs. And people do this. People agree to have open relationships and then have secret affairs.
And it doesn't have to be secret if you're honest, right?
It doesn't have to be, but there's either they're so much in the habit of keeping it secret, or they're actually not wanting to admit that they're having another relationship because they don't want their partner to do the same thing, even though they agreed that they could do this.
So we're back to communication again.
Right.
Or lack of communication. And I love how you said that an affair can actually be blessing in disguise.
It can be.
Mm-hmm. Now tell us more about your book.
Well, the new book that's coming out is called Polyamory in the 21st Century, and it reflects 25 years of my personal and professional involvement with this whole phenomenon of, it's actually a new paradigm for relationship. It's recognizing that much of what we've been taught about relationship is untrue, and recognizing that if you're going to live to be 80, and let's say you're 30 and you're married, that's 50 years that you're going to be together. What are the chances of not being attracted to anyone else in the next 50 years?
Mm-hmm.
What are the chances of wanting to broaden your horizons? Very good. What are the chances of keeping the sexual spark alive for 50 years when you're confining it to one person? So in the last 25 years, I think a lot more people are realizing that there's, first of all, other options than lifelong monogamy, and also that lifelong monogamy is not that realistic. What most people do is serial monogamy. They have one partner for, you know, 2 years, 4, 7, 10, even 20, and then that relationship fizzles and they move on. They end it, hopefully first, or they have an affair. Either way, they move on to the next one. And so a lot of people are developing the awareness that, oh, there's other options. We could have an open relationship. We could have a group marriage. We could have a network of intimate friends, and either as a single person or as a couple. There's other possibilities. And as these other possibilities have become more common, all kinds of issues have arisen, and you know, everything from how you communicate with your children, if you have them, or your relatives or your neighbors about this, to how do you know if this is something that's going to work for you personally, because it doesn't work for everybody.
Mm-hmm.
How do you deal with the jealousy that may come up? What kinds of reasons do people have for choosing a non-monogamous relationship, and how do you assess compatibility in a non-monogamous relationship? It's different from a monogamous one. So these are some of the things I address in the book, and one of the things I'm really excited about also in this book is that this whole phenomenon has gone global. It's not just in the United States. And so people in other countries have, you know, their unique ways of and reasons for creating a lifestyle like this. And it's also addressing, you know, is this kind of an evolutionary direction that humans are going? And what is the effect on the planet and the society and work and all of these areas of life? Because everything, once we change the family, everything is affected.
Sure, of course. And when does this book actually come out? Because you mentioned another book too, and this the other book's title?
The one that's, or the most recent one that's out already is The 7 Natural Laws of Love.
And where can we get that one? Because you addressed some very important topics in that
right,
book.
Right. And that can be either gotten directly from me on my love site, my website.
I love that.
I don't think I've ever made that slip before, but I like that, yeah. Anyway, it's lovewithoutlimits.com, www.lovewithoutlimits.com, and actually all my books are available on that site, including my ebook on jealousy. And there's also the option to get the Seven Natural Laws of Love on Amazon or Barnes & Noble or any of those online bookstores. And, you know, it's unlikely you're going to walk down to your neighborhood bookstore and find it the way the publishing world works these days. But it's very available online. And
or at your love site.
Right, at my love site.
And then your next book about polyamory will come out.
And that will be out in June, and you can actually pre-order now, and if you use the discount code on my website, you can even get a discount on it. And that's published by Roman and Littlefield, and I imagine it will also be available on all the online sites, there's and, you know, all the online bookstores. But right now, the only source for it is this advance order coupon on my website.
Well, Deborah, thank you so much for sharing with us. I really would like to go a little bit deeper and look at this. There's so much to it, obviously. And I'm going to get both of the books because I'm so interested in polyamory and then also, obviously, the secrets of love. And anything that I can learn about love and relationships, I can't get enough. I love it.
Wonderful.
Yeah, and I'm always learning. And so I really look forward to getting both of your books. And do you offer phone consults? You said something, you do work over the phone.
I do. I work with people over the phone. And you can either contact me by email, which is probably the best way, at Taj, T-A-J, like the Taj Mahal, T-A-J, at lovewithoutlimits.com, or you can phone me at 415-507-1739, and you can talk to me about whether I might be able to support you in either getting through your jealousy or creating, if you're thinking about transitioning into an open relationship or creating a new one, an ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure. So if you set it up from the beginning in a way that's likely to work, you may avoid a lot of the pitfalls that I've learned about the hard way.
Well, that's powerful information and a very nice offer because, you know, there's a lot of people that probably are curious but not sure where to go to, you know, find this type of information.
Yeah. So I'm really happy to give people an unbiased opinion, first of all, about whether I think this is going to work for them. And I've pretty much developed a sixth sense about this. I don't think it's really a good idea for everybody. And that's valuable to know. Or, you know, what maybe it would be good to work on before you try it.
Absolutely.
And then for other people, I can really encourage them, you know, yeah, jump in. I think you're going to have a wonderful experience, and you know, these are some of the things you ought to be considering ahead of time.
Well, our time together has been fabulous. I'm very grateful for you and your time and your information. Thank you for joining me today.
Thank you. It's a pleasure.
All right. We'll talk again soon.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.